I want to tell you my secret now. I see dead people.
Silent Green is people!
She's my sister and my daughter!
Rosebud.
What's in the box?
Hello and welcome to another Slate spoiler special. I am Sam Adams and I am joined in Slate's New York studios by Marissa Martinelli. This week we're spoiling the movie Shazam. Shazam is the story of Billy Batson, an itinerant foster child whose search for his birth mother brings him to a group home in Philadelphia. After defending his disabled foster brother from a pair of school bullies, Billy flees into the Philadelphia subway, but he's unknowingly transported to the Rock of Eternity, where he meets a wizard with a proposition: say my name and take on my powers. Saying that name, Shazam, transforms Billy into a muscle-bound superhero played by Zachary Levi, but he's still a 14-year-old boy inside, which means that even as he's defending the world from ancient terrors, he still has to figure out who he is and where he belongs. So Marissa and I have both seen Shazam. I think we both watched it this week, and I saw it before that a few weeks ago. So where do you come down on Shazam, Marissa?
So I went into this movie with the lowest of expectations. I had never heard of the character as someone who's not up and up on comics. I did know that the character was originally called Captain Marvel, and that had to be changed for obvious reasons since we had a movie called Captain Marvel come out from a totally different studio not that long ago. But I went in with expecting very little, and I left the theater loving it. I thought this was so great and so refreshing, and I'm interested to know how much you knew about it going in, Sam.
I knew that the character existed. I was aware, as you mentioned, that Shazam had kind of started out as Captain Marvel. There's a whole kind of insane history that has to do with characters' rights passing from like one character to another and kind of going out of circulation, and then another one created. There was kind of this DC version of Captain Marvel, who's now called Shazam. There was the Marvel version of Captain Marvel. There was kind of a knockoff version of Captain Marvel called Marvel Man in the UK, who was then revived as Miracle Man by Alan Moore in the 80s, which is now, of course, owned by Marvel Comics, but still called Miracle Man. It's a whole thing.
There's the marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Yes, exactly. This all takes place in the same universe. There's an amazing Lenny Bruce cameo in Shazam. So this is, this movie kind of gave off funny vibes beforehand because the DC Extended Universe, which is this is kind of nominally a part of, we'll get into, how much it actually connects, but it's been in this really kind of weird and unexpectedly interesting period of transition. It was kind of, as the reins of the universe had kind of been handed to Zack Snyder, who directed Man of Steel and Batman versus Superman, and then sort of most of the Justice League movie until he had to withdraw for personal reasons. And he had been steering it in a very, what I think you can really only call a very Zack Snyder-y direction. This is very sort of, men with bulging muscles and lots of kind of comic booky darkness. And, he sort of thinks that the whole idealistic concept of superheroes is basically kind of like kid stuff. There was a screening of some of his movies a couple of weeks ago, and somebody, I guess, asked him a question about, whether or not his Batman was kind of like a murderer. And he basically said, well, though, it's really nice that you think that your heroes can be like, nice and moral, but you're living in a fucking dream world, which is when you're making a story about like men that fly is a weird thing to accuse people of. But nonetheless, I mean, that was sort of Zack Snyder's thing. And it was all sort of building to Justice League, and there were going to be like two Justice League movies, and then this whole, sort of scattering of things bouncing off of that. And then along came a little movie, which you may remember, called Wonder Woman.
I'm familiar.
You are familiar. Yes, I know. You wrote about it for us. And Wonder Woman was a huge success, both in box office terms and in terms of kind of cultural impact, and really offer just a sort of more nuanced and not jokey, but a sort of more, I would say, tonally varied and kind of, somewhat lighthearted or witty take on the character. That movie made like over $800 billion worldwide. That ended up being more than Justice League, which was supposed to be sort of the, you know, DC's Infinity War. Like, we're finally going to bring all our heroes together. And then Aquaman came out after that and made more than either of those movies. That's like, that's over $1 billion around the world. And that was also like about a superhero who kind of like enjoyed being a superhero, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, the Justice League thing kind of fizzled. It doesn't seem like there's going to be a second Justice League movie. You know, Ben Affleck and probably Henry Cavill are kind of out of the universe now. And then along comes Shazam, which is theoretically takes place in the same world, not connected in plot terms to any of those movies, by this kind of what feels like, if you're not sort of pretty hardcore into DC Comics, like this kind of low rent, kind of, you know, sort of a Superman knockoff. They're sometimes rivals in the comics, but I mean, I think outside of, you know, if you're not a big DC reader, this is a character, as you said, that like most people haven't heard of. Mm-hmm. You know, the movie doesn't look sort of especially expensive or impressive from the trailers. So it's just kind of like, what the heck is this? You know, it's not, you know, it's not the Flash movie that was supposed to be coming this year. And now I think it's most recently been pushed to like 2021 or something. You know, it's not the next Wonder Woman movie. It's not the Aquaman sequel. So like, what is this thing? And it turns out to be this really bizarrely, you know, sort of unusually low key. You know, all of these comic book movies kind of fit into these enormous, like multi-gazillion dollar franchises now. And this one's kind of like, you know, low key and a little bit charming. And there's, he's sort of saving the world, but not, kind of not as you notice. So, I mean, what did you... You know, I guess you sort of mentioned this, but what did you have expectations going in? You were just like, were we just seeing this because we were going to talk about it today? Like, what brought you to Shazam in the first place?
I saw it. I was definitely curious about it. I mean, as you pointed out in your review, it's basically Big with superpowers, and who doesn't love Big? But I was really struck going in by the lightness that comes with the movie. Sort of takes on the kid-like persona. It's a very kid-like perception of superheroes where, you know, you have Zachary Levi in this really goofy costume and the joy of Billy and his foster brother, Freddie, who are enmeshed in the tropes of the genre and really enjoy unpacking them, testing out his superpowers. And I found that lovely and refreshing in a way that even Wonder Woman and Aquaman didn't quite reach. Like, it was so, we love superhero movies and we're making one. And that was fun. Tone-wise, it was really an interesting movie because the director, David F. Sandberg, has a background in horror. So you got this kind of technicolor, goofy brightness contrasted with the villains being actually like kind of scary. I mean, I'm not a 13-year-old boy, but That balance was strange to me. Like, I was wondering a little bit who the audience for this movie is.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I mean, we'll kind of walk through some of the major points in the movie as we usually do in these things. So we start off in, I think, 1974. There's kind of a early prequel scene where this character who will, you know, eventually be the villain of the movie, Dr. Thaddeus Savannah.
Is Mark Strong.
Yes, Mark Strong.
Very good at playing villains.
Yes, sadly not played by Mark Strong with like Marvel's. I guess DC doesn't have the de-aging technique yet. So
he's
actually
he's
played by an actual 12-year-old boy and not like little Mark Strong. He's just kind of driving down this, dark road, this icy dark road with his father and older brother in the front seat. Both of whom are kind of jerks. And suddenly he's playing with a magic eight ball, which suddenly starts flashing all these like weird symbols. And then the car speeds up and everyone else disappears and the windows go all frosty. And the next thing he know, he emerges into this kind of underground cavern, which we will later be told is called the Rock of Eternity. And he's met by this wizard played by Jaiman Hansu, kind of gives him an offer. You know, I want you to kind of, you know, grab my staff, say my name, and then my powers will flow through you and be given to you. I'm kind of old and running out of energy. My former six brothers and sisters on the councils of wizards have been killed, and I need somebody to take up my mantle and fight the seven deadly sins, who are kind of the main evil creatures in the movie. But first, you have to prove that you're pure of heart. And instead of taking him up on this offer, little Mark Strong is tempted by the seven deadly sins. You kind of whisper all these creepy little sweet nothings in his ear.
Which we're not privy to. Yes. We don't actually get to hear the details most of the time. We hear, you know, oh, you can prove your father wrong. But it's very unclear what exactly they're promising him.
Yes. But he is sort of found wanting and cast out. And then we flash forward to basically now. So, you know, 40 odd years. And Shazam the Wizard has apparently been trying all along to find this one pure of heart person to take up his mantle. And apparently that's not so easy a task. So by the time he gets around to now and to Billy Batson, who is the, you know, 50th or 60th or 100th person he's tried, it seems like his standards have gone down a little bit.
I think he's tired is the point. He's near being defeated and he can no longer afford to be picky.
Yes. So how would you describe actual Billy Batson, pre-Shazam Billy?
Well, we know he's a foster kid and we know he has a habit of running away even from good homes, in pursuit of his mother, who he was separated from at a carnival as a child. And we see a flashback to that where they're having a wonderful time and his mother wins him a prize and he drops it and he chases it into the crowd. And then he's lost and apparently she never came looking for him. But he has been hunting her down. He has a whole list, a little notebook of people with her name, and he goes to all these different addresses to try to find her. And he's a rapscallion. He pulls pranks on the police. He is a little troublemaker. He's definitely not pure of heart.
Yes. Yeah, he's a bit of a juvenile delinquent. In a very sort of kind of lighthearted, like, 60s TV show kind of way. Mm-hmm. You know, he's just, yeah, like you say, he's kind of like a rapscallion. You know, he's a little scamp. Does not actually do anything bad. But he's a handful, I guess, mm-hmm. you would say. But Shazam is kind of out of options at this point. So he, you know, after Billy performs this, you know, fairly, like, heroic act, these kind of jerky, like, you know, 80s teen movie villains are picking on his brother who walks with a cane or a brace,
a yes. crutch.
Yeah, so these kids at school, these sort of older 80s movie bullies are picking on Billy's foster brother, Freddie, who walks with a crutch. He kind of steps in and you know, hits him in the face with the crutch and takes a stand for him. But then he's outnumbered, so he runs away from them, goes down to the Philadelphia subway, which I have to say, as a resident of Philadelphia, looks only very vaguely like the Philadelphia subway.
They made up for it with all the Rocky stuff.
They did. Yes, we'll get to that. But yeah, so he runs down into the subway, same thing that Mark Strong experienced, like the thing goes fast, it turns all, you know, sort of icy. He emerges into this cave and the wizard says the same thing, you know, place your hands on my staff and my power will flow through you. And Billy, being a 14-year-old boy, when somebody says, place both hands on my staff, he's just, you know, he's like, what, really, dude? And that's just very much kind of the character in a nutshell, you know. And when the wizard says, you know, say my name, Shazam, and Billy just kind of snorts at him, like, this is the dumbest thing he's ever heard of.
I love that, because I also had that thought of, like, Shazam is such a cheesy name for a superhero, and I like that the movie winked at it and made it actually it's acknowledged, it's meta.
Yeah, this is kind of a longstanding complaint of mine. I mean, I, read, like, you know, The Dark Knight Returns and Watchmen, like, as a teenager, and that vision of, you know, kind of dark and gritty and quote-unquote realistic superheroes was very intoxicating as a teenager, but it has become, you know, it is no longer a kind of correction to the mainstream. That has very much kind of become the mainstream, mm-hmm. and it seems like a lot of, certainly the movies have largely forgotten that superheroes as a concept are, like, kind of ridiculous, even if you want to go into the notion of, like, people with, like, you know, superhuman powers, like, doing good and saving the world. It's like, well, why do they have to then wear, like, bright, like, you know, skin tight underwear mm-hmm. and capes to do that? Like, that's just not, you know, it's all kind of foolish. And I don't really say that in a bad way, but I think, like, the movies really could do with leaning into that somewhat. Like, this, you know, the Spider-Man movies have done it a little bit, but Shazam really, like, does it pretty hard, almost as hard as anything I can think of. And it's really kind of delightful, and it feels like it was really pleasant corrective to this coming out within a couple weeks of Infinity War or Avengers Endgame, I guess. Yes. Which just looks to be a very, you know, heavy, dark, you know, everyone in the world is dead and what do we do about it kind of thing. And to Justice League as well, and the Batman versus Superman and that very, and the Zack Snyder direction that DC was going in. This is just tonally kind of the complete opposite of that. And it's such a joy.
It also takes advantage of it visually because, as I said, Zachary Levi's character is, his costume is ridiculous and the movie's self-aware about it, but it also contradicts with this world they've created. The Rock of Eternity is sort of ancient looking and dimly lit, and the villains are these clouds that are also statues, and then you have this bright pop of color. And it's never really explained why this is the form that has been assigned to the superhero and to later superheroes in the movie. It's just like a child's imagining of what a superhero is.
Right. And supposedly this is there's a brief backstory where Shazam the Wizard talks about, you know, once I give my power to this champion and he turned bad and he unleashed the seven deadly sins. And there's a little sort of, I don't know, kind of like sort of congealing like CGI sparkles or something that form into kind of stars in front of Billy Batson and kind of show the whole thing and kind of sort of outline puppet form or something. And that original champion seems to be kind of costumed in the same way Shazam is. But there's no, I mean, I don't know why. This is a movie where the powers come from a wizard. So why you need to sort of like explain, well, why does he then have like a, you know, bright white kind of satiny cape and like red sort of, you know, like 1920s strongman muscles and things like that. It's just, it's all, I think one of the keys to the movie is just that it prominently features like a wizard. You know, there's no, yeah, okay, so Aquaman's like, you know, half, you know, Atlantean god, and you know, Diana is this sort of, you know, Amazonian royalty. But there's some sort of, I don't know, grounding is the wrong word to you, but there's some sort
if
of
there's
like
an explanation.
Yes, for like why they have these powers. And in this case, the answer is literally, to paraphrase The Simpsons, a wizard did it.
I kind of wondered, though, was he sitting around like, I should get into costume design while I wait?
Yeah. I mean, maybe. I don't know what wizards do with their spare time.
What was the vision board for this?
Yeah, I mean, if he had like 45 years and he only contacted like 50, 60 people, that was a lot of spare time to just hang out in the Rock of Eternity and work on his beard, I guess. So let's see what happens.
Well, as this is all happening, we know that Mark Strong, Thaddeus, has now grown up to be Mark Strong, and he has been searching the world for people who have experienced the same thing he did as a child, because his experience with the wizard ended with an altercation within the car with his brother and father as they were driving. They sort of fought over the Magic 8-Ball, and the result was a car crash that left his father in a wheelchair. And this obviously has shaped him as a person, and he has a lot of resentment because the villain of this movie, in a lot of ways, is toxic masculinity. This little boy whose father and brother belittled him and told him he wasn't tough and he's not a man and he'll never be a man. And he grows up in pursuit of the very factors that caused this one mistake so that he can take power and finally prove himself.
And because this is a spoiler special, we can kind of, you know, jump forward to the ending a little bit and just say that it is, and it's not surprising once you've kind of been with this Dr. Savannah character for a while, but it turns out that the really key one of the seven deadly sins that he's most closely bonded to is envy.
Mm-hmm. To the point where the other ones physically manifest outside of him, but envy stays within him because he's so closely identified and because that's where he's drawing his power from.
Yeah, having watched, I went back and saw the movie a second time, and there's a big deal made at the climax of the movie, like, oh, how many deadly sins are like out of him and how many are still like remaining in his little glowy purple eye, and it's, you know, five or it's six, and there's always one in there, and the climax of the movie is figuring out how to get that seventh one out. I'm not sure the movie entirely like plays along with that for the entire time. I kept sort of like counting deadly sins in the earlier scenes, and I don't think we need to get into all of that.
I wish the movie had made more of the deadly sins. It's an interesting concept that isn't really engaged with necessarily. There is a scene early on where Mark Strong confronts his father and Six greed on him because his father has a massive company and therefore must be greedy. And greed has sort of extra arms to symbolize. And you can see gluttony has like a mouth on its stomach. But I really do wish the movie had made more visually and conceptually of the seven deadly sins as villains.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's sort of, it works with the movie in a way that like the villain isn't that interesting or scary in some ways. It's
because the hero is interesting.
Yeah.
You have a very conventional villain played by Mark Strong who's good at doing that to contrast this very unconventional superhero.
Yeah. So, you know, watching it again, I mean, I was really, it really cemented for me how much, because I had heard good things about this, about the movie from people who had seen it earlier. And I started watching it and, you know, but that also sort of happens with like every superhero movie. Somehow they managed to find for every new Marvel movie, there's always somehow like some critics like, this is the best one yet, you know, and this is the one that's better than the one before it that was also the best one yet. And I don't trust those anymore because it's, I mean, I'm sure those people really love the movies, but I often end up not loving them. So I'm always just kind of like, well, we'll see. And the first 20 minutes of this movie, I was kind of like, this is like happened again. Like people are like, oh, Shazam is so great. And it seems kind of like it's really just kind of like grinding along in second. And it was much more clear to me the second time through how much the movie kind of catches fire once Billy says Shazam and Zachary Levi comes on. Mm-hmm. He is basically, you know, as you mentioned, kind of playing this character who's sort of like a Superman version of Tom Hanks in Big. He has this, you know, amazing, you know, very obviously kind of padded, muscly adult body. But he's still very much like a 14-year-old boy inside. And some of the first things he does when he gets his body is he's like, oh, I can buy beer. You know, I can go in a strip club. Although he goes into a strip club and the only thing he comes out with is like a basket of hot wings. You know, he's not even like, doesn't even quite understand what's going on. And they're just like, wow, all the ladies are really nice.
He ran out of money real quick.
Yes, yes. Yeah, because he probably paid like $75 for like six chicken wings or something. So he gets the beer and I was a little like, well, like, you know, but children are going to watch this movie and it's not like 13-year-olds don't know about buying beer. But I was, it was a little surprising to me that a sort of, you know, like Warner Brothers product would sort of semi-endorse that. And of course, as soon as he gets the beer, it's done really well, actually. They come right out of the convenience store, like spit it out. They're like, oh, that tastes terrible. And then there's just like a smash cut of them walking out with like, you know, energy drinks and hot beef jerky and stuff like that. And it turns out like that's actually what they want because they're not even like old enough to sort of fully take advantage of it. But Zachary Levi just did like such a good job of kind of semi-inhabiting his own body, of the kind of never letting you lose sight of the fact that there's a kid inside him.
For me, the convenience store scene is where the movie really clicked because Jack Dylan Grazer, who's Freddie, who's an actual child for the most of the movie, he and Zachary Levi have a good back and forth chemistry, and it was very fun when the convenience store gets robbed and Freddy's like, shoot him in the face, because they're testing his powers. And it's ludicrous to have that many powers, but the joy that they took in finding out what they are really sold it.
Yeah, and they do a great job with this whole, because you sort of have to have with an origin story, like some, he's just like, you're a superhero. Okay. But it's like, what can I do? Like, am I, you know, do I have like laser beams that shoot out of my eyes? Can I teleport? Can I fly? Am I strong? Like, what's my power? And they do this as a series of, they do it as a series of tests, and they are the movie's very kind of like YouTube conscious in a lot of ways. So they actually do these things as kind of like little YouTube short films and upload them. And before he's like actually fought anybody or really done anything good, Shazam kind of goes viral in the world of the movie. So he is, and again, because he's like a teenager, he like doesn't handle it all that well. He's like, oh, cool, I'm famous. So now I can like charge people for selfies, and I can like go out and like, now that I have these amazing powers, I can go out and like show them off and like busk. You know, he's like standing on the top of the art museum steps in Philadelphia, shooting lightning out of his hands, like singing aloud to the Rocky theme. And he's got like a guitar case in front of him, and he's like, you kind of like showing off her superhero powers for tips, basically, which is just, I mean, it's a, like a ludicrous concept, but it's also sort of like, well, you know, maybe you would do that. You know, maybe you wouldn't.
But not even as a kid. I mean, as an ordinary person who's not an Amazonian warrior or a half undersea god, like, if you got superpowers like that, wouldn't you pull some shenanigans? I think I would. I don't know if I'd zap an ATM necessarily, but I would definitely have a lot of fun testing them out.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's great that, like, Bruce Wayne is, like, already a billionaire and stuff, but everybody else, I mean, you know, why does Superman have to work, like, such a crappy day job, you know? I mean, you could certainly get out of media and go into some more lucrative and stable industry.
He's an alien.
Yeah.
In this case, not only did we have a child, but we had an actual ordinary human being who did not sign up for this, but is fully embracing it.
Yeah, and I mean, I kept going back to, I mean, the comparison with Spider-Man, I mean, especially last year's Into the Spider-Verse, but also the kind of new Tom Holland version of it, which is more, sort of leans more into the kind of awkward teenager aspect of the character. And he, I think, is kind of the only other comparable superhero who's had as much sort of like, like, I'm a superhero, this is awesome thing. But I mean, the Spider-Man's origin story too is like that he gets punished for that. Like, he does this kind of Shazam thing in this movie where he's like, you know, showing off and just being really, really into like having his cool powers. And because he's dicking around, like, he lets a mugger go and that mugger kills his Uncle Ben. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, with great power comes responsibility, which basically means like you can't really enjoy this.
And this movie nods toward that too when he's shooting his lightning and he accidentally causes a bus to go careening off a bridge, and there's a very tense moment where he has to actually do something heroic beyond charging people's cell phones. And I thought there might actually be consequences, but he pulls it off and he manages to save everyone.
Right, although that is the moment, and it takes like quite a while. I remember getting a message from you last night when you were heading to the screening, and you were like, this thing is 2 hours and 12 minutes long.
You know what? And your response was that it didn't feel 2 hours and 12 minutes long. And you were right and you were wrong. I think for the meat of the movie, that second act, it goes by so quick and it's so peppy. But I think this movie still fell into the same, like, third act, never-ending battle problems. The origin of the beginning is too long.
Yeah.
Prolonged kind of drawn-out blockbuster, which it didn't need to be. But it was still, I think, that middle chunk, there's like a perfect movie in there.
Yeah, yeah. So it takes about, I mean, it takes about an hour, I think, or, you know, give or take, for Shazam and the villain, Dr. Savannah, to like actually come together. But it does happen kind of after this thing. So it is sort of like he's given into, you know, he's finally starting to see consequences for just being kind of like, a kind of show off with his powers. And so he, you know, accidentally like shoots an overpass and like makes a bus go off it. And he saves the bus and all the people on it are fine. But that's when
Dr. Savannah
should,
fine. Yes. We should point out some of them hit the glass pretty hard. I was like, they're just all walking off the bus. They're fine.
Yes. I mean,
no concussions, no broken bones.
Yeah. That scene does not, you know, hold up to the laws of physics. And lots of, for one thing, he's sort of like a bus, you know, like plummets, you know, I don't know, 50, 60 feet off an overpass, and he catches it by like the glass of the front window. And I'm just like, that would break. But anyway, so this is when Dr. Savannah shows up, and Shazam kind of treats him like he's a just kind of annoying autograph hound. And he's like, dude, you know, like, oh, okay, whatever. I don't know what your deal is. And like, nice coat that you're wearing and stuff. And then Dr. Savannah punches him and it hurts. And this is like a huge, this is one of the things I really like about this movie. This is like not only a shock to Shazam, but it's actually like scary. He kind of like goes up in the air, falls down on a police car, and he's got a bloody nose. And it's just, you don't actually see, like, you know, sometimes heroes get sort of dramatic like forehead cuts or something like that. But like, when was the last time you saw a hero with just like a bloody nose?
That's a good point.
Yeah.
I cannot recall a time. Also, he plays it the way a young person would, with like, there's no pretending to tough it out, or, you know, there's no instant rage. He's afraid, which is nice to see, especially because Mark Strong's character is so, he's had this upbringing where he's been told to like repress those kind of emotions. And so you have the nice contrast of Shazam embodying them and not knowing that society wants him to suppress them.
Right. And so Billy, you know, they have this kind of fight in the air, and Billy just kind of gets his ass kicked in like 12 different ways. And the only way he eventually escapes him is by kind of de-Shazamming and turning back into his teenage self, who, of course, the Dr. Savannah does not you know, does not know that that's a thing. So he doesn't know to look for kind of like a weedy little 14-year-old boy. But he does. I mean, he takes, you know, I guess what you might call the coward's way out. He just kind of runs away. That has consequences, because then Dr. Savanna finds his foster brother, Freddie, follows him back to the house, and then kind of takes his foster siblings, all five of them, hostage, which eventually kind of leads to the climax. I mean, there's a lot we're leaving out, but it feels... As you were saying, like, the movie doesn't feel long in a lot of it, but it does when you're kind of just trying to get to, like, the important plot beats. There aren't actually that many of them. Like, I guess there's a lot of it that's devoted to character.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't feel like, in a lot of these movies, it feels like that's the stuff that the movie's just kind of, like, paying lip service to. Like, oh, okay, the hero has to have, like, some flaw that they overcome or whatever. In Shazam, it really feels like that's actually what the movie is interested in. And some of the other stuff... you know, suffers a little bit by comparison. Some of the big fight scenes and stuff feel like they're just there because they have to be there. And actually what we want to do is this like kind of awkward teenage stuff. Like that's mm-hmm. That's what the movie's really interested in.
Well, the relationships are very meaningful, and a major one for Billy is he's in this lovely group home where it's two former foster kids who have taken in now six foster kids. But he still is always looking for his mother. And it's actually his foster siblings who find her for him, and he goes to see her, and we get a flashback to the same scene that we saw early in the movie from Billy's point of view, from her point of view, where they're at the carnival, and it turns out for her it was not a great day. For her, she was 17 with a son that she wasn't expecting. She's frazzled. She sees him get lost, and then she sees that the police are taking care of him, and she just walks away. So to him, what was a tragic separation was actually her making a choice. And her life is not so great, it's implied. When he finally gets face-to-face with her, it's not a touching reunion. In fact, she says this is not a good time. And you hear someone calling from inside, and it sounds like a very angry man.
Yep.
And there's no kind of closure there except for... Billy finally gets to choose his family now that he knows that there isn't one waiting for him.
Right. He said one of his foster siblings found out, okay, well, the reason you haven't heard from anybody is because your dad's been in prison for 10 mm-hmm. years, but your mom's like been, you know, two subway stops away this whole time.
That's deeply sad in a movie that is this goofy.
Right. It is very sad. And even the sort of, because that opening, you know, childhood Billy scene that you're mentioning is, you know, you don't want to subject any superhero movie to that much kind of, you know, plausibility test. But the whole idea that like, oh, his mom lost him at a carnival and then he hasn't been able to find her for 10 years is like, well, that's not, does he not know his name? Does he not know where he lives? Like, how do you not find your mom after that? So that was kind of nagging at me for the better part of an mm-hmm. hour or so. And then to find out that it was like, oh, actually his mom didn't lose him. She kind of took advantage of this to abandon him to what she kind of rationalizes and says was probably a better life. Mm-hmm. But it really was just kind of her opportunity to get out. And that is clearly kind of, you know, weighed on her or set her on or kept her on a pretty sort of miserable life path. And it turns out that Billy has been, for as kind of, you know, troubled and fitful as his life has been, has probably been better off.
They could have gone the saccharine route. And in fact, they almost did, where when he first hears that his foster siblings have found his mother, he says, oh, she's dead, based on their faces. And the answer is no, she's two subway blocks away. Like, that is a different version of this movie would have gone with, oh, she's dead, and therefore the memory of her is, you know, preserved as sort of this wonderful, lost, tragic mother. But there's a nice found family aspect that goes hand in hand with superhero movies, in that there are these groups of people with disparate powers who are often outcasts or misfits in some way who find each other and unite for a common goal.
Yeah, and the climax of the movie, that scene with his mother ends with him saying, well, I have to get back to my real family.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been a conversation you've heard between the foster mom and dad before about how it isn't a home until you call it a home. So what they're doing is, like, we're going to provide a loving environment for this kid. whether or not he chooses to stay or be at home is that's like out of our control. Like he has to pick that. So it is very much, I mean, kind of literally a family of choice. Like he has to say, okay, this is where I belong. And him saying, okay, I have to get back to my real family is like, he's made that choice. And the climax of the movie really leans into that in an interesting way. And one that brings it, and I couldn't get into this in the review because it's too spoilery, but it really leans into that family aspect in a way that brings it very close to Into the Spider-Verse from last year. So not surprisingly, there's like a big fight between him and the villain. Billy wins. There's a really great moment that I just want to single out, a kind of wonderful kind of meta demythologizing moment where the two of them are kind of, you know, they fly up above the city. They're like facing each other across buildings. You know, Mark Strong starts giving this big evil villain speech, and then it cuts to Billy's perspective. And because he's, you know, 300 feet away and up in, you know, at the top of the buildings, he can't hear anything Mark Strong is saying. And he just starts yelling, I'm like, I can't hear anything you're saying. And he's just kind of making little flapping mouth motions with his hands. Come back to Mark Strong is still giving his big dramatic speech and totally unaware that it's not getting through. And you just kind of realize like, oh, this trope that we've seen in like every movie is actually like incredibly dumb.
And lampooning it really, for me, justified having such a generic villain
right
in the movie itself, because it could really only wink at the villain in that way because he was so Mark Strong, like really grimacing and, yeah, and you know, monologuing throughout
black
the whole
leather
movie.
Jacket.
And exactly.
Yeah. So, but the key beat in that last scene is that, you know, Mark Strong, his plan is to force Billy to do what the wizard had him do in the first place, which is to kind of grab onto the wizard's staff, say Shazam again. This time, Mark Strong will be the one kind of receiving the power. And he, in addition to having the evil power of the seven deadly sins, will also have like the good, you know, Shazam wizard power, and then have all the power and be all powerful or something.
To what end? I think this was a big plot hole, and that's not necessarily the worst thing in the world, because this is a movie where I'm much more interested in Billy's interpersonal relationships than in whatever Mark Strong's goal was. But we see very early in the movie that he gets his revenge on his brother and father, and it leaves this question of why is he doing this? What is the plan after he actually assumes this power? And we never get an answer.
Yes. He does not have like a, he doesn't know where he wants to be in 5 years. So what happens then is Billy, both because he's fighting this one guy and the seven deadly sins, is vastly outnumbered, but also realizes that he maybe doesn't want to actually kind of shoulder this big, grim, you know, solitary superhero burden all by himself. So he grabs the staff away from Dr. Savannah and does the same thing, but instead he does it with his five foster siblings. And so they all grab onto the staff, which is a gesture. The writing here is a little soft, so I didn't quite pull this together until the second time, but it is a reflection of, they do a kind of, you know, all hands on, you know, all hands a deck kind of, you know, a huddle thing is their way of kind of doing grace around the family dinner table. So he says, you know, all hands on deck, and they all put their hands in. And Billy's kind of absented himself from that because he's not quite sure that he wants to belong. But so they all put their hands in on the staff, and they say, you know, they say his name. Eventually they say the wrong name first. He says, say my name. And they all say, Billy. Yes. Which is another great, like, cause it's a fairy, like the music goes all there. And like, you know, the French hordes are coming in and whatever. And then it just like goes flat. But they say Shazam, and all of a sudden there are six mm-hmm. Shazams.
Not seven. And, key point. The movie, there are a lot of sevens. Seven wizards,
yeah.
Seven deadly sins, but there are six of them. So I'm wondering if that's gesturing toward a potential sequel.
Or it's, you know, Billy and Mark Strong has the seven deadly sins, and Billy has five foster siblings and two foster parents. And that's seven. So, I mean, and I'm sitting there like, it kind of like trying to do math in my head while I'm watching it. And I'm like, well, this is actually maybe not that important. But yeah, so there, all of a sudden there's this Shazam force, and I'm like the sort of various, you know, spider men and women in Into the Spider-Verse. Mm-hmm. That is a kind of a, you know, like racially and gender diverse bunch. And it's, you know, it's this interesting, not exactly a subversion, but a complication of, you know, this is another superhero movie about a, you know, tortured in a teenage sense, kind of angsty white male who gets these powers to solve all his problems. But he decides, like, I don't actually want to be like just the guy.
Right.
You know, I would rather share this with my, you know, blended foster family. And so the family all transforms. They got a pretty sort of cool group of adult actors to play them, including Adam Brody, who is a kind of great addition to the team, and Megan Good and some other people. And so they all fight and they win, of course.
And when they all Shazamify, for lack of a better term, we see the characterizations of the foster siblings pay off a little bit, because Shazam has a variety of powers, and they all, I don't know if they only get one power, if they all each only use one power, but you see kind of Pedro, who's always lifting weights, is really, really strong. He can hold up the Ferris wheel. Darla, who's the little one and a fast talker, she's really quick. And you see Freddy, who has limps for most of the movie, and his sort of central question when he's trying to get to know Billy is flight or invisibility, the classic superhero choice. Invisibility being the answer that everyone maybe secretly wants, because you could do sneaky stuff with invisibility, but flight being the choice of a hero and the choice that everyone says. He has flight. So the implication is that he has the heart of a hero. So that was a nice touch.
Yeah, that's good. I hadn't thought about, like, I sort of noticed their powers being parceled out, but I didn't really put together with that. And, you know, and it is sort of a surprisingly, like, well-written movie in that sense, that is not, it doesn't kind of underline it. And because there's all this kind of, you know, goofy banter and you know, not quite fart jokes, but kind of like stuff on the level that, like, I've had a number of people ask me kind of, oh, is this appropriate for my kids? And there's some, like, you know, borderline like PG-13 stuff, like maybe the Seven Deadly Sins are a little scary. There is a joke that involves, like, at least kind of being vaguely aware of what a strip club is and stuff like that.
Although we don't go inside. That's kind of the joke, yes. Is that we never go inside, even though they keep revisiting the strip club.
Yeah, it reminded me very much, and I'm this may be partly because you know, of the Captain Marvel movie about the character who is currently named Captain Marvel, also kind of being a, you know, period piece. But this one felt, it reminded me a lot of kind of just generic kind of 80s action movies in a way. Like, there is a sort of, it doesn't look like it cost $200 million. It doesn't, you know, the CGI is not amazing. You know, a lot of the scenes are just like, you know, even like his costume's not that impressive. He's not sort of, you know, lit like this Greek god or anything. A lot of these scenes are just like, oh, that's obviously some guy in like spandex and a kid like in an alley talking. You know, that scene looks like it cost like $50 to shoot. I found that kind of threadbare quality kind of oddly appealing in a way. It may just be kind of in contrast to sort of all these other movies, but that felt kind of enjoyably low key.
It also creates some fun contrast. So the very end of the movie is Freddy at lunch in the cafeteria, and Billy had promised, or he didn't promise earlier in the movie, but Freddy wanted him to come in as Shazam and sit with him because Freddy feels invisible and everybody loves Shazam, and Billy does not go through with it, and it's humiliating for Freddy. And the movie ends with Shazam coming and sitting with him and all the foster kids, and everyone in the school is really impressed. And then Shazam mentions that he brought a friend, and in walks the torso, because we don't see the head, of Superman.
In walks the Henry Cavill was not available version of
exactly.
Superman. Yeah.
And it's just very funny to see Superman in a cafeteria of what is like a middle school, high school.
Yeah. No, yeah, it's a great moment. And I sort of just, and even the way when Zachary Levi comes out there and he's saying, like, hello, it's Freddy. Like, I'm, you know, and he's doing, like, he's an adult, but he's sort of talking as if he's a kid, putting on an adult voice, like, hello, I am a hero. I am here to talk to my friend. And it just, you know, it just reminds you of, like, you know, the stupid voices that, like, you know, Ben Affleck and Michael Keaton and everybody else have put on to play, or Christian Bale is the worst. Sorry, people. But, you know, these, like, ridiculous, like, you know, gravelly voices that people have been put on to play Batman and a lot of these sort of more self-consciously serious superheroes. And it's like, well, they can just talk like a person.
Yep.
It's fine. So that almost brings us to the end. There is one post-credit scene that we have to talk about.
So you warned me about this post-credit scene, and you said it's a WTF post-credit scene. So I had my guard up and was waiting for it to be WTF, and it was extremely weird.
Why don't you describe it?
So after the credits, we see Mark Strong. He's been imprisoned, and he's scrawling the symbols from the movie all over the wall, and he's clearly consumed by it, and he's been defeated. And all of a sudden, this voice starts speaking to him in his cell, and he looks around for the source of it. And, you know, you think it's going to be the guy in the cell next door or something like that, or some sort of beyond spirit. And then the camera pans to this, like, caterpillar-like creature that looks like it's out of Alice in Wonderland with a little voice box. And it is extremely weird.
Yes, and it's just, even in a movie that is weird and goofy, it's just like, now there's a talking caterpillar who's talking about, like, well, now the seven realms will be ours. And it's just like, what is going on here? Yeah, so this is, I think a lot of people are probably going to be Googling this in the theater. But so you don't have to, this is apparently, and I'm not going to put myself out as an expert on Shazamology here, but I've now looked this up. This is a character named Mr. Mind. He is a kind of hyper-intelligent alien worm who figures into the Shazam universe and is described at one point as, quote, having the body of a lowly worm, the conscience of a Hitler, and the brain of a genius.
That's quite a combination.
Yes. So this is one of those, even more than the kind of like sort of the Howard the Duck like post-credit scene in Guardians of the Galaxy. This just seems very much kind of like a piss take on all these post-credit scenes, like setting up this ominous sequels and stuff. There may be another Shazam. There were rumors that, I mean, this movie was originally, at one point, Dwayne Johnson was going to play Shazam. Then he decided that he wanted to play Black Adam, who's this kind of historic nemesis of Shazam's. Then he was not in the movie at all. There are rumors, there's no confirmed sequel yet, but that he might figure into the sequel. I think people would probably rather see Dwayne Johnson playing Black Adam than like a CGI worm as the main nemesis in the movie. I mean, I'm no expert, but it's just this hilarious, like, just what is going on?
You gotta,
like,
get the CGI worm demo.
Yes, exactly. So, Marissa, would you like to see Captain Marvel come back and fight a hyper-intelligent Hitler worm? Are you going to be recommending Shazam to all your friends? Where do you come down
it's
on this?
It's hard to say no to that potential synopsis. I also think I would worry that a lot of this movie's fun was about a little boy embodying this superhero body and learning to use his powers, and a sequel presumably would not feature any of that. So that would be my main concern with a sequel.
Yeah, I enjoyed the movie very much. I am probably going to end up seeing it a third time just because I have a 9-year-old who can quote the trailer from memory and was not able to go to either screening with me. So I will probably end up seeing again. I would be fine, as much as I like this movie, with that being it, as much because I'm so tired of like mandatory sequels to everything, and just could we just enjoy this one movie? There are, you know, jokes. There's a whole sort of animated credit sequence that are kind of joking about like how this character would fit in the larger DC universe. It is very difficult to imagine. Even as kind of lighthearted as some of the moments in, say, Aquaman are, it's pretty hard to imagine Shazam being alongside him, like those characters kind of existing in the same tonal universe. And I feel like he's kind of better off on his own.
Right. We see in the credits, the animated sequence, he steals the Batmobile the same way that he stole the police car at the beginning of the movie.
Yes. And this is all done in this sort of like, you know, kind of pencil animation and line paper. Like these are kind of the idle, you know, doodles you would draw like in boring math class or something like that. So I really like Shazam. I recommend it. I would be very happy if there were no more Shazam movies. They want to make another one, I will probably check it out. But for now, I am perfectly happy with all the Shazam that we have.
We'll call you Shazam Adams.
Please do. All right. Thank you for listening. I'm Shazam Adams. Please subscribe to the Slate Spoiler Special podcast feed. And if you like the show, please rate and review it in the Apple Podcast Store or wherever you get your podcasts. If you have suggestions for movies or TV shows we should spoil, or if you have any other feedback you'd like to share, please send it to spoilers@slate.com. Our producer is Danielle Hewitt, and our engineer is Merritt Jacob. Thanks for listening.